Why do parents have children? This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with a thought for today. Why do parents have children? This is a very good question, isn't it? Well, you think, okay, people get married and sex is accepted in their marriage and children are the result of the sex. Well, not necessarily. Many people get married and they have planned marriages. They choose not to have children right away. They choose to have children when they have established a house for them, or they've established a good job for themselves, or other priorities that they put before the children come. And why is it that they're putting these priorities there? Because they want to prepare themselves to be the kind of parent and to have the kind of home that they'd like their children to be raised in. Well, if you're going to get married, you're getting married because there's a charisma that's going on between you, the two people, the man and his wife. And this charisma says, I love you so much, I want to be part of you, I want you to be part of me, I want to have children, I want to have a home, I want to have a life together. No. If we don't get married for those reasons, if we don't get married because we want to have something mutually together, then why get married? You can just as readily be dear friends and have a lot of fun together and go out dancing together, go out enjoying life together. You don't have to have a home. But a home is really the first teaching center that exists in the universe. People get married because they want to have a home. They want to have a family. And they want to raise that family to be a living image of their ideals, of their purposes, of their desires for themselves, of what they feel are their values. So, children come into a family. And every child that comes into the family because the parents want that child with just those particular peculiarities that that child has. That child may be an ideal child, perfect in spirit, mind, and body. The child may be a person who is born with apparent limitation, a limitation of mental limitation, or a limitation of physical, anything. And as a parent, that's our child. We cannot love them any less than if they were born perfect, than if they were born with a slight imperfection, or any imperfection. Whatever it is, it's our child. I think this is very obvious and known very practically, psychologically, throughout all of time. The only creatures that take children, offspring, that are imperfect and cast them out are dogs and cats. If a kitten's not going to make it, the mother kicks it out of the nest so it doesn't get its milk, and so it'll die. And they do the same to little puppies and what have you. Now, we think that's just terrible. Well, the dogs and the cats, from their native attitude, are unable to take care of all of the little critters that they give birth to, and so the imperfect ones, the ones that cannot take care of themselves, the ones that will not grow up to be sound and strong, they dispatch from the nest so that they will not be around to have to take care of them. Now, we have not necessarily graduated to another level of awareness, but we have come into another understanding. And the other understanding is that every offspring of our being is given to us or created by us as an expression of who and what we are. If we have a child who is a mongoloid, for instance, or if we have a child who has a disease or any other problem, or a child who is mentally a little slow, or who is a genius, who is super fantastic, beyond imagination, just outstanding. You know, you can have all levels of awareness there. And we have this child, and this child comes into our family so that we can be the master that we are. So that we can look at them and say, you are whole and perfect. So we can look at them and say, I see past any appearances to the truth about you. I see your original purity and integrity. We look at the child and we expect out of them everything good and beautiful. So the child has a limiting attitude. And so we don't want to hurt the child's feelings. We don't want the child to feel bad. So we treat the child as though it is, oh, it has a limited experience, and then we don't expect it to be better. When we don't expect the child to be better, then the child never becomes better. It remains that image that we first gave birth to. If a child has a limitation of the body, an illness of any kind, it means that somewhere in our consciousness, we want to clean up our consciousness and begin to think of that child as being whole and perfect. We want to think of, no matter what the condition is, mental, physical, anything at all that the child may have, psychological, we see that child whole and perfect. Now, the ugly thing here, and the really ugly thing is, first, we have to see ourselves whole and perfect. If we're going to think that our heredity, our gene chromosome structure, allows for beings to be born in our world who are imperfect, then we are going to acknowledge that as a fact, and then we are going to acknowledge that when such a being is born into our life, that is the way they're supposed to be. Now, if this is what we want to do, we will do it very beautifully, and many people are doing it very effectively. They don't stop, they, oh dear, born in my family, this is an imperfect person, and then they ignore the child, and they put the child aside, they do everything they can, forgetting that this child is born into their life for the purpose of their being the master that they are. For the purpose of their being the ones who see the child as the child truly is, the ideal of child. And as the parent looks at the child as an ideal as a child and calls forth the ideal as a child, that will come forth. Now, if a parent who had a child with a deformed foot, for instance, were to speak to that child every single day and say, you are wonderful, you are whole and perfect, every organ, action, function of your body is whole and perfect, your feet are whole and perfect, your legs are whole and perfect, your arms are whole and perfect, everything about you. And if the parent would go on and on and on and on and on and on and on, telling the child how perfect it is, telling themselves how perfect their child is, it would not be long before that child would reflect exactly what it was that that child wanted. I spoke about our dear friend Charles Fillmore, who all of his life had one foot just a little shorter than the other, and one of his main choices in life was to have both feet be the same length. And so he worked on it, but he had other priorities. And he worked on it, but he had other priorities. Well, finally, when he was in his late 90s, he was working on it, and he finally said, I've had enough of this. Both my legs are equal length. Bunk! And they were equal length. You say, well, that's not true. That's not true. That's a miracle. That can't happen. Oh, it sure can, and it does all the time. Imperfections in children are cured constantly, every moment of our life, as parents see the children whole and perfect, as the children learn to see themselves whole and perfect, as the children learn to live in a whole body mentally, they live in a whole body physically. As they live in a mind that is balanced, they live in a mind that is balanced. These are things that parents have chosen to do by being parents. They chose to raise a family. They chose to love each child equally. They chose to have perfect children. They chose everything to be ideal in their world. Now, many people come up and say, well, that's just a cross you have to bear. That's just a sin that somewhere in your life you're paying for it. No, it isn't. Perhaps it is a sin, perhaps it's a cross, but the thing is, you don't have to keep it. You don't have to keep that cross. You don't have to keep that sin, that previous experience that you had. You can put a new cause in motion. Anywhere in our life we can put a new cause in motion. Anywhere in our thinking system we can put a new cause in motion. Anywhere in the universe we can put a new cause in motion for us, right now, right here, right where we are, doing right what we're doing. It doesn't matter if our son is 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years old, and that son has a problem that he's born with. It's never too late to have that change. Fillmore had the leg perfected in his late 90s. Now, why did he wait so long? Well, he says he was working on everybody else's problems. He said he's working. No. For us to take the little problem that we have, whatever that may be, and to make that our experience, make that our joy, make that our primary work in life. When you can take, because that's why we're given that opportunity. That's why it is created in our world, for us to take charge of it. We are not given a horse so that we let someone else take charge of it. We're given a horse so we take care of it. We're given a car so we can take care of it. We're given a house so we can take care of it. We're given a child so we can take care of it. We're given dogs or cats so we can take care of them. How do we take care of our dog or cat? How do we treat them? Do we treat them like humans or do we treat them like animals? If we treat them like animals, the dogs and cats are in divine order. They do everything perfectly. If we treat them like children, then however we treat our children is how we our dogs and cats respond. Now, when any experience comes into our life, when any condition comes into our world as a child that is less than perfect in any way, it is our privilege, it is our responsibility, it is our joy, it is our opportunity to show that we are indeed masters, that we do indeed put the cause in motion for perfection. We do indeed do that. A mother who has a child and the child's not cooperating, and the mother says, "You're not cooperating, you're a terrible child, you're bad, bad, bad." Well, the child will just certainly become better and better. The child will just certainly become worse and worse and will demonstrate whatever it is the parent doesn't want. Whereas if the parent would say to the child, "You certainly walk so beautifully. You walk so straight and so tall. You are fantastic." I remember the story of a dear student of ours. She's, in her 80s and 90s, and she married a young man who was in his 80s and 90s. And the young man told us the story of his life. In fact, he wrote a book about his life, and the book told about when he was a little child, the experiences that he went through. The experiences that he went through as a child. He was born with crippled legs. One leg was just a stub, and the other leg had a useless foot on it. And he lived on a farm. He lived in a rural part of the country. And his brothers and sisters were able to go out after school and work in the family garden, which had already been completely worked over, and whatever potatoes they could find that hadn't been found under the ground, they could take and sell. And so the children were very eager to find these potatoes. Well, this little fellow, his name is Sam, this little fellow wanted to go out and join his brothers to do this, but his legs wouldn't cooperate. So he crawled out there. He was just a little guy, and he crawled out there, and he did what his brothers and sisters did. His knees were fine, and his hands were fine, and he dug in the soil, and he found potatoes. In fact, he was the best potato finder of all of them. And he sold his potatoes, and he made himself some money so he would have money. Now, as he grew older, it disturbed him that he had this dangling foot that he couldn't use. So he said to his mother one day, "I'm going to have that foot cut off. I'm going to have that foot cut off so I can put on a prosthesis on both feet and I can walk around." And the mother said, "Oh dear, don't take the foot away. Don't do that." And he said, "Mom, I have to do that." And his mother recognized that he was very definite. And she allowed him to do that. And he had the other foot taken away. And he had prostheses put on his legs and feet so he could walk. Now, if the mother had been really a fabulous mother, she is good, that's for sure, but a really fabulous mother, the moment the child was born with limitations of any kind, with feet that were not perfect, she would immediately say, "Your feet are whole and perfect, your feet are..." She would make that a mantra in her heart, in her soul, in her being. She would look at that child and see the perfection in his feet, see the perfect. She'd look at the other children's perfect feet, and then she'd look at her child with the imperfect feet, and she'd see the child with the imperfect feet, with perfect feet. She'd make that her mantra, her mantra, her mantra, her mantra. She'd make that her statement, her affirmation. She'd make that her truth. And as she'd do this, then this could be the truth for her. But she looked at the child and said, "So be it." And the child did not want to live with the limitation of not being able to walk around, so he created himself being able to do it. Now, he could have created perfect legs, and if he'd created perfect legs, people would have looked at him and said, "Well, didn't you have imperfect legs before?" And he would say, "I have perfect legs. Well, I remember. I have perfect legs." He would not admit ever to having imperfect legs, because if he admitted to having them, he would have them again. Now, people who have wonderful healings in their world, and then all of a sudden, they're back where they were again, merely because they put their attention to where they were instead of to who they are, who the truth is about them. As parents, we have the privilege of raising our children to be the ideal that they are. And to raise them to be the ideal that they are means that every single moment we say to them the truth about themselves. "You are a genius. You are wonderful. You are intelligent. You always do everything right. You always make me so proud of you. When I see you put your clothes away so beautifully, folding with such care and such love, I know that you respect your clothing, but more so, you respect yourself. When I see you tidy up your room after you're playing in it or using it or whatever you're doing, it makes me so proud. I want to give you the Taj Mahal. I want to give you everything because you're so wonderful." And the child just improves and improves. When the child has a little trouble in school, you say, "You're a genius. You'll figure that out. In you is all knowledge. In you is the ability to do that." Now, the technique to do it, your dad and I will work with you on that, and we'll even go and talk to the teacher on how we can help you to learn to do that where it seems to be just a bit of a trouble. And we will say to you, "It's easy, it's easy, it's easy. I am a quick learner. I am a fast learner. I have a snappy mind. I have an alert mind. I'm intelligent." And you see, the more we say that about our children, the more we're saying that about ourselves. And the more we say that about ourselves, the more we'll say that about our children. And the more we say that about our children, all of our children will respond in like fashion. It's a wonderful, beautiful, fabulous gift. When we choose to be parents, we choose a wonderful opportunity to demonstrate to the world how perfect we are through ourselves and through our children. Our children will not all turn out to be great monumental beings, but they will be great monumental beings in whatever they choose to be. They will be a great husband, a great wife. They will be a great lover. They will be a great worker in any job they have. They'll be a desired employee. They'll be a desired employer. They'll be a most magnificent. They will have integrity from the point go in their life throughout all their life. They will have honesty. No one can ever fault them for that. They will be the most honest, beautiful people. They may not have all the money in the world, but they will have money that is necessary for their life. They will have happiness. They will have joy. They will have harmony in their life. They will live a life of peace. All conflict will pass them by and will not know how to stop at their house. They will not know how to stop at their life. They will live in the highest and best. And this is what we as parents, we who choose to be parents, say to ourselves and our children. You live in an ideal family. You live in an ideal world. You live in an ideal body. You live in an ideal mind. Everything you do is ideal. You are fabulous. Now, not better than somebody else. That's not the point. You live in the ideal. You live in the most wonderful, beautiful, fulfilling, fantastic expression of all that is good and right. That's who you are. That's all you know. That's all that is. Now, whether you're a parent or a teacher, or whether you're a friend or a neighbor, whether you're a relative or whether you're the grandparents, it doesn't matter what level of awareness you play your game. You're always shining out who and what you are. You're always shining out in the people around you who and what you are. The people around you are a reflection of who you are. Or you would not have them around you if they were not who you are. The wife or husband that you choose in your life is an ideal reflection of the ideal you. They're not the ideal husband or ideal wife, but they're the ideal reflection of the ideal you. The perfect you. How wonderful that is. We have chosen the great privilege in being a parent. Our children show how much we really care in being a parent. Do we train our children to do all the things that make their own life happy? What if we weren't around anymore? Like the children go off to college, or they go off to have their own life, married or not married. What kind of a mate are they going to be? What kind of a person are they going to be? Can they iron their own clothes? Can they wash their own clothes? Can they cook their own meals? Do they desire to cook nice meals for themselves alone or in two? Do they desire to live a harmonious life and a harmonious body at all times? These are things that parents teach to their children. But of course, the parent has to believe this themselves first, or else they cannot teach this to their children. Where do we learn this? We don't learn this from our parents, or our parents' parents, or our parents' parents' parents, or however far back we want to go. We learn it right here and right now by listening within. What does the divine in you tell you how you should live your life? You don't know? Well, take time to be still and listen. Take time to go into meditation, into the silence, and let the divine in you reveal to you your perfect pattern, your perfect life. What is the next step you should take? Listen within. Follow the guidance from within. It never fails you. Listen within and follow the wisdom that shines forth every moment. Listen within and follow the unconditional love that encompasses you and your world as you listen within. We are all privileged to have the totality of the perfection of life within us right now. And we also have the opportunity to meditate upon it, to think upon it. And as we think upon it, we will live it. It's true. It's true. Have a lovely day, and know that I love you. I love you. I love you.